The Mighty Slinger by Tobias S. Bakel and Karen Lord. Narrated by Ron Butler.
Earth began to rise over the lunar hills as the Mighty Slinger and the rovers readied the Tycho stage for their performance. Tapping his microphone, Euclid noticed that Kumi barely glanced at the sight as he set up his djembe and pan assembly. But Jenny froze and stared up at the blue disc, her bass still limp between her hands. "It's not going anywhere," Kumi muttered. His long, graying dreadlocks swayed gently in the heavy gravity of the moon and tapped the side of a pan with a muted ting. "It'll be there after the concert, and after our trip, and after we revive from our next long sleep." "Let her look," Vega admonished. "You should always stop for beauty. It vanishes too soon." "She taking too long to set up," Kumi said. "You all call her Zippy, but she ain't Zippy at all." Euclid chuckled as Jenny shot a stink look at her elder and mentor. She whipped the bass out stiff like she meant business. Her fingers gripped and danced on the narrow surface in a quick, defiant riff. Raising his mic wand at the back, Vega captured the sound as it bounced back from the Lunar Dome performance area. He fed the echo through the house speakers, ending it with a punctuating note of Kumi's locks hitting the pan with a ting and Euclid's laughter rumbling quietly in the background. Daka, the last of the rovers, came in live with a cheerful fanfare on her patented delirium, an instrument that looked like a harmonium had had a painful collision with a large quantity of alloy piping. An asteroid thin man in a black suit slipped past the velvet ropes marking off the VIP section and nodded at Euclid. "Yes, sir. Your pay's been deposited. The spa is booked and your places in the long sleep pool are reserved."
"Did you add the depreciation protection insurance this time?" Euclid answered, his voice cold with bitter memory. "If your grandfather had sense, I could be retired by now."
Kumi looked sharply over. The man in the suit shifted about.
"Of course I'll add the insurance," he mumbled. "Thank you, Mr. Jones," Euclid said in a tone that was not at all thankful.
"There's someone else who would like to talk to you," the event coordinator said.
"Not now, Jones."
Euclid turned away to face his band.
"Only 40 minutes to curtain time, and we need to focus."
"It's about Earth," Jones said. Euclid turned back.
"That rumor?"
Jones shook his head. "Not a rumor. Not even a joke. The Right Honorable Patience Bushulty got notification this morning. She wants to talk to you." The Right Honorable Patience Bushulty awaited him in one of the skyboxes poised high over the rim of the crater. Before it, the stands that would soon be filling up, slanting along the slope that created a natural amphitheater to the stage. Behind it, the gray hills and rocky wasteland of the moon.
"Mr. Slinger," she said. Her tightly wound hair and brown spider silk headscarf bobbed in a slightly delayed reaction to the lunar gravity.
"A pleasure to finally meet you. I'm a huge admirer of your sound." He sat down, propped his snakeskin magnet boots up against the chair back in front of him, and gave her a cautious look.
"Madam Minister, to what do I owe the pleasure?"
All of the band were members of the Rock Devils cohort and Consociate Fusion, almost a million strong, all contract workers in the asteroid belt. They were all synced up on the same long sleep schedule as their cohort, whether working the rock or touring as a band. And here was a minister from the RDCCF's assembly asking to speak with him. The RDCCF wasn't a country. It was just one of many organizations for people who worked in space because there was nothing left for them on Earth. But to Euclid, meeting the Right Honorable Patience Bushulty felt like meeting a member of parliament from the old days. Euclid was slightly intimidated, but he wasn't going to show it. He put an arm casually over the empty seat beside him. "They said you were far quieter in person than on stage. They were right." Bushulty held up a single finger before he could reply,
and pointed to two women in all black bulletproof suits who were busy scanning the room with small wands. They gave a thumbs up as Bisholti cocked her head in their direction and retreated to stand on either side of the entrance. She turned back to Euclid. "Tell me, Mr. Slinger, how much have you heard about the Solar Development Charter and their plans for Earth?" So it was true. He leaned toward her. "Why would they have any plans for Earth? I've heard they're stretched thin enough building the Glitter Ring." "They are. They're stretched more than thin. They're functionally bankrupt. So the SDC is taking up a new tranche of preferred shares for a secondary redevelopment scheme. They want to redevelop Earth, and that will not be to our benefit." "Well then," Euclid folded his arms and leaned back. "And you thought you'd tell an old Calypso singer that because..." "Because I need your rhymes, Mr. Slinger." Euclid had done that before. In the days before his last long sleep, when fame was high and money had not yet evaporated. Dishing out juicy new gossip to help assembly contract negotiations. Leaking information to warn the workers all across the asteroid belt. Hard-working miners on contract, struggling to survive the long nights and longer sleeps. Sing them a song about how the SDC was planning to screw them over again. He knew that gig well. He had thought that was why he'd been brought to see her. To get a little something to add extempo to a song tonight. Get the belt all riled up. But if this was about Earth... Earth was a garbage dump. Humanity had sucked it dry like a vampire and left its husk to spiral toward death as people moved outward to bigger and better things. "I don't sing about Earth anymore. The cohorts don't pay attention to the old stuff. Why should they care? It's not going anywhere." Then she told him. Explained that the SDC was going to beautify Earth, re-terraform it, make it into a new Garden of Eden for the rich and idle of Mars and Venus. "How?" he asked, skeptical. "Scorched Earth. They're going to bomb the mother planet with comets. Full demolition. The last of us shipped into the ring to form new cohorts, new generations of indentured servitude. A clean slate to redesign their brave new world. That is what I mean when I say not to our benefit." He exhaled slowly. "You think a few little lyrics can change any of that? The wealth of Venus, Mars, and Jupiter dwarfed the cohorts in their hollowed-out, empty old asteroids." "One small course adjustment at the start can change an entire orbit by the end of a journey," she said.
"So you want me to harass the big people up in power for you now?"
Bisholti shook her head. "We need you to be our emissary. We, the Assembly, the last representatives of the drowned lands and the dying islands, are calling upon you. Are you with us or not?" Euclid thought back to the days of breezes and mango trees.
"And if they don't listen to us?"
Bisholti leaned in close and touched his arm. "The majority of our cohort are indentured to the Solar Development Charter until the Glitter Ring is complete. But, Mr. Slinger, answer me this. Where do you think that leaves us after we finish the ring? The largest project humanity has ever attempted." Euclid knew. After the asteroid belt had been transformed into its new incarnation, a sun-girdling, sun-powered device for humanity's next great leap, it would no longer be home. There were few resources left in the belt. The big planets had got there first and mined it all. Euclid had always known the hollow shells that had been left behind. The work on the glitter ring. The long sleep, so that they didn't exhaust resources as they waited for pieces of the puzzle to slowly float from place to appointed place. Bisholti continued, "If we can't go back to Earth, they'll send us further out. Our cohorts will end up scattered to the cold, distant areas of the system, out to the Oort cloud. And we'll live long enough to see that."
"You think you can stop that?"
"Maybe, Mr. Slinger. There is almost nothing we can broadcast that the big planets can't listen to. When we go into long sleep, they can hack our communications, but they can't keep us from talking, and they'll never stop our songs.
It's a good dream, Euclid said softly, for the first time in the conversation, looking up at the view over the skybox. He'd avoided looking at it. To Jenny, it was a beautiful blue dot. But for Euclid, all it did was remind him of what he'd lost.
But they won't listen.
You must understand, you are just one piece in a much bigger game. Our people are in place, not just in the cohorts, but everywhere, all throughout the system. They'll listen to your music and make the right moves at the right time. The SDC can't move to destroy and rebuild Earth until the glitter ring is finished. But when it's finished, they'll find they have underestimated us. As long as we coordinate in a way that no one suspects.
Using songs?
Nah, impossible, he declared bluntly.
She shook her head, remarkably confident. All you have to do is be the messenger. We'll handle the tactics. You forget who you're speaking to. The Basholti family tradition has always been about the long game. Who is my father? What positions do my sons hold, my granddaughters? Euclid Slinger. Babatunde. Listen to me. How do you think an aging Calypso star gets booked to do an expensive, multiplanetary tour to the capitals of the solar system, the seats of power? By chance? She called him that name as if she were his friend, his inner circle intimate. Kumi named him that years. Decades ago. Too wise for your years. You were here before, he'd said. The father returns, sent back for a reason. Was this the reason?
I accept the mission, he said.
De, mi se de o. Earthrise come and mi wan go.
Euclid looked up, smiled. Let the cord go. He wouldn't be so blatant as to wink at the VIP section. But he knew that there was a fellow rock devil out there, listening out for certain songs and recording Vega's carefully assembled samples to strip for data and instructions in a safe location. Vega knew, of course. Had to, in order to put together the info packets. Daka knew a little, but had begged not to know more. Afraid she might say the wrong thing to the wrong person. Jenny was still, after her first long sleep, 19 in body and mind, so no, she did not know. And anyway, how could he tell her when he was still dragging his feet on telling Kumi? And there was Kumi, frowning at him after the end of the concert as they sprawled in the green room, taking a quick drink before the final packing up.
Baba, you on this nostalgia kick for real?
You don't like it? Euclid teased him.
All that sweet, sweet soca you grew up studying, all those Kaiso legends you try to emulate?
That ain't your sound, man.
Euclid shrugged. We can talk about that next time we're in the studio. Now we got a party to be at.
After 25 years of long sleep, Euclid thought Mars looked much the same. Except maybe a little greener, a little wetter. Perhaps that was why the directors of the SDC MME had chosen to host their bash in a gleaming biodome that overlooked a charming little lake. Indoor foliage matched to outer landscape in a lush canopy, and artificial lights hovered in competition with the stars and satellites beyond.
Damn show-offs, Daka muttered.
Am I supposed to be impressed?
I am, Jenny said shamelessly, selecting a stimulant cocktail from an offered tray.
Kumi smoothly took it from her and replaced it with another, milder option. She looked outraged.
Keep a clear head, Zippy, Vega said quietly. We're not among friends.
That startled her out of her anger. Kumi looked a little puzzled himself, but he accepted Vega's support without challenge. Euclid listened with half his attention. He had just noticed an opportunity.
Kumi, all of you, come with me. Let's greet the CEO and offer our thanks for this lovely party.
Kumi came to his side.
What's going on?
Euclid lowered his voice.
Come, listen and find out.
The CEO acknowledged them as they approached, but Euclid could sense from the body language that the busy executive would give them as much time as dictated by courtesy and not a bit more. No matter that Euclid was a credentialed ambassador for the RDCCF, authorized by the Assembly, he could already tell how this meeting would go.
Thank you for hosting us, Mixash, Euclid said, donning a pleasant, grinning mask. It's always a pleasure to kick off a tour at the Mars Mining and Energy Megaplex.
Thank you, the executive replied. Your music is very popular with our hands.
Pardon?
Kumi inquired, looking in confusion at the executive's fingers wrapped around an ornate cocktail glass.
Our employees in the asteroid belt.
Kumi looked unamused. Euclid moved on quickly.
Yes. You merged with the SDC. Pardon me, we are still trying to catch up on 25 years of news. About 10 years ago?
A little pride leaked past the politeness.
Buyout, not merger. Only the name has survived, to maintain continuity and branding.
Euclid saw Daka smirk and glance at Vega, who looked a little sour. He was still slightly bitter that his ex-husband had taken everything in the divorce, except for the De La Vega surname, the name under which he had become famous and which Vega was forced to keep for the sake of convenience.
But don't worry, the CEO continued.
The Glitter Ring was always conceptualized as a project that would be measured in generations. Corporations may rise and fall, but the work will go on. Everything remains on schedule, and all the hands, all the, how do you say, cohorts, are in no danger of losing their jobs.
So the cohorts can return to Earth after the ring is completed?
Euclid asked directly. Mix Ash took a careful sip of bright purple liquid before replying.
I did not say that.
But I thought the Earth Development Project was set up to get the SDC a secondary round of financing to solve their financial situation,
Daka demanded, her brow creasing.
You've bought them out, so is that still necessary?
Mix Ash nodded calmly.
True, but we have a more complex vision for the Glitter Ring than the SDC envisioned, and so funding must be vastly increased.
Besides, taking money for a planned redevelopment of Earth and then not doing it would technically be fraud. The SDC MME will follow through. I won't bore you with the details, but our expertise on geoengineering is unparalleled.
You've been dropping comets on vast, uninhabited surfaces, Daka said. I understand the theory, but Earth isn't Venus or Mars. There's thousands of years of history and archaeology, and there are still people living there. How are you going to move a billion people?
Mix Ash looked coldly at Daka. We're still in the middle of building a ring around the sun, Mix Miriam.
I'm sure my successors on the board will have it all figured out by the next time we wake you up.
We understand the concerns raised, but after all, people have invested trillions in this project.
Our lawyers are in the process of responding to all requests and lawsuits, and we will stand by the final ruling of the courts.
Euclid spoke quickly, blunt in his desperation.
Can't you reconsider? Find another project to invest in? Earth's a mess, we all know it, but we always thought we'd have something to come back to.
I'm sure a man of your means could afford a plot on New Earth, Mix Ash began. I've seen the pricing, Vega cut in dryly. Musicians don't make as much as you think.
What about the cohorts? Jenny said sadly. No one in the cohorts will be able to afford to go back.
Mix Ash stepped back from the verbal bombardment.
This is all speculation. The cohorts are still under contract to work on the Glitter Ring.
Once they have finished, negotiations about their relocation can begin.
Now, if you will excuse me, have a good night and enjoy the party. Euclid watched despondently as the CEO walked away briskly. The rovers stood silently around him, their faces somber. Kumi was the first to speak.
Now I understand the nostalgia kick.
The SDC, now with the MME, you and I both know they don't stand for you and me. There was still a tour to play. The band moved from Elysium City to Electra Station, then Achilles Fons, where they played in front of the Viking Museum. The long sleep on the way to Mars had been 25 years. 25 years off, 1 year on. That was the shift the Rock Devils cohort and consociation fusion had agreed to. The key clause in the contract Euclid had signed way back when in an office built into the old New York City seawall. That gave them a whole year on Mars. Mix Ash may have shut them down, but Euclid wasn't done. Not by a long shot. Kumi started fretting barely a month in.
Jenny's stepping out with one of the VIPs, he told Euclid.
She's 19. What you expecting? A celibate band member? I don't see you ignoring anyone coming around when we breaking down.
Kumi shook his head.
No, Baba, that's one thing. This is the same one she's seeing, over and over, since we arrived here. She's sticky sweet on him.
Kumi, we got bigger things to worry about.
Earth, I know, man. Look, I see why you're upset.
Kumi grabbed his hand.
I miss it, too. But we getting old, Baba. I just passed 60. How much longer I could do this? Maybe we focus on the tour and invest the money so that we can afford to go back someday.
I can't give it up that easy, Euclid said to his oldest friend. We going to have troubles?
Back when Euclid was working the rocks, Kumi had taken him under his wing, taught him how to sing the old songs while they moved their one-person pods into position to drill them out. Then they'd start singing at the start of shifts, and soon that took off into a full career. They'd traveled all through the belt, from big old Cirrus to the tiniest cramped mining camps.
Kumi sucked his teeth.
That first time you went extempo back on Pallas, you went after that foreman who'd been skimping on airlock maintenance, you remember?
Euclid laughed. I was angry. The airlock blew out, and I wet myself waiting for someone to come pick me up.
When you started singing different lyrics, making them up on the spot, I didn't follow you at first. But you got the SDC to fire him when the video went viral. That's why I called you Baba.
So no, you sing, and I'll find my way around your words, always.
But let me ask you, think about what Ash said. You really believe this fight's worth it?
Euclid bit his lip.
We have concerts to give in the Belt and Venus yet, he told Kumi.
We're not done yet.
5 months in, the Martians began to turn. The concerts had been billed as cross-cultural events, paid for by the Pan-Human Solar Division of Cultural Affairs and the Martian University's Division of Interhuman Musicology Studies School. Euclid, on stage, hadn't noticed at first. He'd been trying to find another way to match up MME with Screw Me and some lyrics in between. Then a comparison to Mars and its power and the people left behind on Earth. But he noticed when this crowd turned. Euclid had grown used to the people of the big planets just sitting and listening to his music. No one was moving about, no hands in the air. Even if you begged them, they weren't throwing their hands out. No working, no grinding, no nothing. They sat in seats and appreciated. He didn't remember when they turned. He would see it on video later. Maybe it was when he called out the rape of Earth with the red tape of the SDC MME and made a visual of red Mars that tied to the red tape. But suddenly, those chair-sitting intercultural appreciators stood up. And it wasn't a jump. The crowd started shouting back. The sound cut out. Security and the venue operators swept in and moved them off the stage.
Back in the green room, Jenny rounded on Euclid.
What the hell was that?
She shouted.
Extempo,
Euclid said simply. Kumi tried to step between them.
Zippy.
No.
She pushed him aside. Daka, in the corner of the room, started disassembling the delirium, carefully putting the pieces away in a G-Force-protected aerogel case, carefully staying out of the brewing fight.
Vega folded his arms and stood to a side, watching.
I damn well know what extempo is. I'm young, not ignorant.
Everyone was tired. The heavy gravity, the months of touring already behind them.
This always happens. A fight always come halfway through, Euclid said. Talk to me.
You're doing extempo like you're in a small free concert in the belt, on a small rock. But this isn't going after some corrupt contractor, Jenny snapped. You're calling out a whole planet now? All Martians? You crazy?
One person or many. You think I shouldn't?
Euclid understood. Jenny had been working pods like he had at the same age. Long, grueling shifts spent in a tiny bubble of plastic where you rebreathed your own stench so often you forgot what clean air tasted like. Getting into the band had been her way off the rock. This was her big gamble out of tedium. His, too, back in the day.
You're not entertaining people. You're pissing them off, she said.
Euclid sucked his teeth.
Calypso been vexing people since all the way back. And never mind Calypso, Zippy. Entertainment isn't just escape. Artist always talking back. Always insolent.
They paid us and flew us across the solar system to sing the song they wanted. Sing the fucking song for them the way they want. Even just the banana boat song you're messing with and going extempo. That shit's carved in stone, Euclid. Sing the damn lyrics.
Euclid looked at her like she'd lost her mind.
That song was never for them. Problem is, it gets sung too much and you abstract it, and then everyone forget that song is a blasted lament. Well, let me educate you, Miss Baptiste. The banana boat song is a mournful song about people getting their backs broken hard in labor and still using call and response to help the community sync up, dig deep, and find the power to work harder, cause them ain't had no choice.
He stopped. A hush fell in the green room. Euclid continued.
It's not a smile and dance for them song. The big planets don't own that song. It was never theirs. It was never carved in stone. I'll make it ours for here, for now, and I'll go extempo. I'm not done, Zippy. I'm just getting started.
She nodded.
Then I'm gone.
Just like that, she spun around and grabbed her bass.
Kumi glared at Euclid. I promised her father I'd keep an eye on her.
Go, Euclid said calmly.
But he was suddenly scared that his oldest friend, the pillar of his little band, would walk out the green room door with the newest member and never come back. Kumi came back an hour later. He looked suddenly old, those raw sun wrinkles around his eyes, the stooped back. But it wasn't just gravity pulling him down. She's staying on Mars. Euclid turned to the door.
Let me go speak to her. I'm the one she angry with.
No.
Kumi put a hand on his shoulder.
That wasn't just about you. She's staying with someone. She's not just leaving the band. She's leaving the cohort. Got a VIP. A future. Someone she thinks she'll build a life with.
She was gone. Like that. Vega still had her riffs, though. He grumbled about the extra work, but he could weave the recorded samples in and out of the live music. Kumi got an invitation to the wedding. It took place the week before the rovers left Mars for the big tour of the asteroid belt. Euclid wasn't invited. He did a small, open concert for the Rock Devils working on Deimos. It was just him and Vega and 50 miners in one of the teardown areas of the tiny moon. Euclid sang for them just as pointedly as ever.
"So it's up to us, you and me, to put an end to this catastrophe. Them ain't got neither conscience nor heart. We got to pitch in and do our part. 'Cause if this earth demolition begin, we won't even have a pot to pitch piss in."
Touring in the belt always gave him a strange feeling of mingled nostalgia and dissonance. There were face-to-face reunions and continued correspondence with friends and relatives of their cohort, who shared the same times of waking and long sleep, spoke the same language, and remembered the same things. But there were also administrators and officials who kept their own schedule, and workers from cohorts on a different frequency. All strangers from a forgotten, distant past or an unknown near present. Only the most social types kept up to date on everything, acting as temporal diplomats, translating jokes and explaining new tech and jargon to smooth communication between groups. Ziamara Bushulti was social. Very social. Euclid had seen plenty of that frivolous, idle behavior from political families and nouveau nobility like the family Jenny had married into. But given that surname, and the fact that she had been assigned as their tour liaison, he recognized very quickly that she was a spy. "Big tours in the belt are boredom and chaos," he warned her, thinking about the argument with Jenny. "Lots of downtime slinging from asteroid to asteroid, punctuated by concert mayhem when we arrive." She grinned. "Don't worry about me. I know exactly how to deal with boredom and chaos." She didn't lie. She was all business on board, briefing Vega on the latest cryptography and answering Daka's questions about the technological advances that were being implemented in glitter ring construction. Then the butterfly emerged for the concerts and parties as she wrangled fans and dignitaries with a smiling enthusiasm that never flagged. The Vesta concert was their first major stop. The mighty slinger and his rovers peeked out from the wings of the stage and watched the local opening act finishing up their last set. Kumi brought up something that had been nagging Euclid for a while.
"Baba, you notice how small the crowds are?"
"This is our territory, not Mars. Last big tour, we had to broadcast over Vesta because everything was sold out."
Vega agreed. "Look at this audience. Thin. I could excuse the other venues for size, but not this one."
"I know why," Daka said. "I can't reach half my friends who agreed to meet up. All I'm getting from them are long sleep off shift notices."
"I thought it was just me," Kumi said. "Did SDC MME leave cohorts in long sleep? Cutting back on labor?"
Daka nodded.
"Zia mentioned some changes in the project schedule. You know the charter's not going to waste money feeding us if we're not working."
Euclid felt a surge of anger.
"We'll be out of sync when they wake up again.
That messes up the whole cohort. You're sure they're doing this to cut labor costs or to weaken us as a collective?"
Daka shrugged.
"I don't like it one bit, but I don't know if it's out of incompetence or malice."
"Time to go," said Vega, his eyes on the openers as they exited stage left. The rovers drifted on stage and started freestyling, layering sound on sound. Euclid waited until they were all settled in and jamming hard before running out and snagging his mic. He was still angry, and the adrenaline amped up his performance as he commandeered the stage to rant about friends and lovers lost for a whole year to long sleep. Then he heard something impossible. Kumi stumbled on the beat. Euclid looked back at the rovers to see Vega frozen. A variation of one of Jenny's famous riffs was playing, but Vega shook his head, "Not me," to Daka's confused sideways glance. Zia's voice came on the sound system, booming over the music.
"Rock Devil's cohort, we have a treat for you. On stage for the first time in 25 years, please welcome Rover bassist Jenny Zippy Baptiste.
Jenny swooped in from the wings with another stylish riff, bounced off one of the decorated pylons, then flew straight to Kumi and wrapped him in a tumbling hug, bass and all. Prolonged cheering from the crowd drowned out the music. Euclid didn't know whether to be furious or overjoyed at Zia for springing the surprise on them in public. Vega smoothly covered for the absent percussion and silent bass, while Daka went wild on the delirium. It was a horrible place for a reunion, but they'd take it. Stage lighting made it hard to tell, but Jenny did look older and stronger? More sure of herself? Euclid floated over to her at the end of the song as the applause continued to crash over them all.
"Welcome back, Zippy," he said. "You're still good. Better even."
Her laugh was full and sincere. "I've been listening to our recordings for 25 years, playing along with you every day while you were in long sleep. Of course I'm better."
"You missed us," he stated proudly.
"I did." She swatted a tear out of the air between them with the back of her hand. "I missed this, touring for our cohort, riling up the powers that be."
He raised his eyebrows. "Now you want to shake things up?"
"What changed?" She shook her head sadly. 25 years, Baba. I have a daughter now. She's 20, training as an engineer on Mars. She's going to join the cohort when she's finished, and I want more for her. I want a future for her." He hugged her tight while the crowd roared in approval.
"Get back on that bass," he whispered. "We got a show to finish."
He didn't bother to ask if the nouveau nobility husband had approved of the rebel rover Jenny. He suspected not.